This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the latest Flyers Talk podcast. I am Jordan Hall, and as always, I am joined by the dynamic Joe Fordyce. Joe, the Flyers get a win they really needed to have, a 3-2 decision over the Sharks. But the big story, John Tortorella not behind the bench. He served the first game of his two-game suspension. Let's get into that first, Joe. What did you think of the league's decision? Did you find it harsh? Did you find it right? Overall, how'd you feel about it?
There's two schools of thought. The idea that he refused to leave the bench. I mean, he did leave the bench and it was kind of in short order, but he said he wasn't going to leave the bench. So the suspension, I get that there was a suspension. But then when you look at things like what happened with Matt Rampe hitting Jonas Siegenthaler the other night and he gets four, and you start to compare like, okay, this hit that could have ended a guy's career, John Tortorella gets half of the suspension for what he, that part of it doesn't really make sense. There's a lot of things that don't make sense though about the decisions made in this regard from incident to incident with the NHL and their discipline. So, I mean, I thought it would be a game just to kind of make a statement like, you show up the referee, this is kind of what's going to happen. I didn't think it'd be two games. And then, you know, it gets compared because the Rempe thing happens around the same time. So, you know, when you compare these suspensions, it's always about like what happened around that time. And that's just, I think, instinctually, that's what you compare it to. And that seems a little weird to me because I don't think there's any comparison between the two incidents. The one thing is a coach getting a little like rambunctious with his criticism of the official. And the other is something that is, there's just not a place for it in the league. There's a place for hitting. There's not a place for what Rempe did. And I mean, so that was where I was a little conflicted on it. And at first I was like, okay, two games, not a big deal. But then when I saw that suspension, I'm like, all right, the Tortorella suspension should have been one game. If that's four, that should have been one. So that's the way I looked at it. You know, comparing those two things, because I really think when you break down suspensions, you got to look at what's the, like, what is the track record for, okay, this equals this, this equals this. We don't have a ton of sample size in terms of coaches getting thrown out of games because it doesn't happen that much. And maybe that's why it's a two-game suspension, is that it's rare that a coach goes far enough to get ejected from a game. So maybe that is why they went with two, to kind of say like, hey, you're not going to abuse the referee. So yeah, I mean, but I would say one. I thought it should have been one. And if he appealed it, maybe it would have gone to one, but he didn't. And, you know, he'll serve the second game against Toronto and then be back for the Boston game Saturday. And, you know, they'll just move on. Obviously, he's moved on already. He wouldn't comment on it the other day. So, but yeah, I mean, I thought it was a little much.
Cam Atkinson was on the bench right in front of Tortorella, and he's known Tortorella for a long time. He's probably heard that coach bark at the officials plenty of times, countless times. And he said what Tortorella said he didn't think really crossed the line. A couple other players didn't feel it warranted an ejection. So maybe the leash was a little short there. As for the suspension, like I do think the league needed to do something. I mean, the coach is on the bench. He's refusing to leave. He's cursing at the officials. It's clear as day on video.
So I would be curious as to what part of that got him ejected. Was it not leaving the bench part is after the ejection.
Yeah.
So if he leaves the bench right away, does he get a suspension?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point. Maybe it's only one game.
Yeah. I know what the player said, but we could all see what he was saying.
Right.
I mean, it was some strong language, and it was clear that his point was he wanted to talk to the official that threw him out of the game.
If Wes McCauley, I think, goes over there and just gives him a conversation, maybe all that's avoided. But
right, and then it seemed like Wes was kind of trying to step in for a younger referee and sort of protect his crew, if you will, much like you would see a crew chief in a baseball game. You know, the crew chief is going to a lot of times step in and be the front for that crew.
Right.
That's kind of like their duty. So I thought there was a little bit of that from Wes McCauley. And it was clear Torts wanted to talk to the guy that threw him out, which never happened. And that's why he wouldn't leave. So I don't know. I've heard some opinions that the NHL should institute something kind of like the NFL does, where if there's a controversy, the officials are available to the media after the game. Yeah. That doesn't happen in the NHL. I'm not thinking it's going to happen anytime soon, because it's not as if there's been like there's a lot of controversial hits that happen in this league. There's at least one or two every playoffs, and you never really hear from the officials. You hear from former officials, guys that are employed by TV networks and things that are part of broadcasts that talk about that, but you never hear from the officials that are on the ice. And I don't see that changing anytime soon, but if it did change, I think that might be for the better, and you wouldn't have so much, you wouldn't have like armchair officiating going on the next day by media and fans. You might still have some, but it would give it a little more clarity again, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
And the league's going to protect its officials. Like that's how they operate. And they don't like bad looks, and it wasn't a great look. John Tortorella is a veteran head coach who people respect, and he's on the bench lashing out at the officials. He's refusing to leave. It's not a great look. So I really, very much agree with you, Joe. I think they were coming down hard to make sure this can be avoided maybe in the future. Ejections don't happen often. So I did think he was going to get suspended. I wasn't sure how many games. In the grand scheme, though, Joe, I don't think it's a huge deal for the Flyers. John Tortorella can still prepare the team at practice. He can still prepare them at morning skates. He just can't be on the bench for the games. Bradshaw really runs the defensive group, so he kind of controls how many minutes the defensemen get. So maybe if there's any adjustment, it's for Rocky Thompson and the forwards. But I don't think it's a huge deal. The Flyers won Tuesday. They'll be without him for one more game behind the bench, and then I think we'll get back to normal.
Yeah, the one other point I would make is much like the Flyers don't. I guess Nick DeLaurier would be the closest guy they have to this, but a guy that the league might want to make an example of for Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson's a perfect example. A guy that has a reputation and a track record for behaving a certain way on the ice. Mm-hmm. Maybe his punishment in a hypothetical situation is more severe than a guy who is not that type of player, not a guy that's always mixed up in controversy. So in this case, John Tortorella, we know, is one of the more vocal coaches with the officials, and he has been for two plus decades.
Yeah.
So maybe when he does it, he gets the most severe penalty.
Yep.
And whereas if you had a guy like, I'm just going to pick last night's David Quinn is the coach of the Sharks last night. Mm-hmm. He's not mixed up in a lot of this. He's not like this great video opportunity of him just laying into the officials. Maybe he's treated a little differently in a scenario like that. So maybe they're like, this is the guy there. Let's make an example of him. He's a well-known guy and he's been a fiery coach and everybody knows his reputation and track record for 2+ decades of being the same exact way. We'll make a little bit of an example of him and just, you know, let people know this isn't going to fly. So that might have been the reason for it too.
Yeah,
so
it's a great
all
point.
Those things combined, yeah. I think is the reason why it was two and not one. But again, when you put it up against some of the things that go on in this league, some of the hits and some of the liberties that some of these guys take on the ice, it seems a little unbalanced, we'll say.
It's a great point. The league probably sees these clips of Tortorella going viral of him lashing out at officials. And while it's great entertainment for fans, I imagine the NHL is not too fond of it. I don't think they love it. And absolutely, we're probably trying to make a statement here of, hey, we need to take this back a little bit. And that's what the league did. But Flyers are moving forward. They got a big win Tuesday night. Joe, that was a needed win over the Sharks. Maybe people thought it should have been a little bit more lopsided than it was, a 3-2 game. But Flyers needed it. They got the win. What was your biggest takeaway from that win over the Sharks?
Well, I think it was a get to and get out of Dodge type of game. And last week, when the Flyers are in the midst of tough games and this Sharks game is on the schedule, there's no doubt the players see it. I asked Scott, I said, you know, is it tough to get up for some of these games? Like, for example, you're playing division games, Eastern Conference games, and then mixed in, you have a Western Conference team. I'm not speaking of the Sharks. I'm speaking of Chicago last week, or maybe
Blackhawks were kind of mixed in, but with all the division
There's like a sporadic Western Conference games mixed in.
Yeah.
And I asked him if it was tough to get up for, and he said, whatever night that was, he says, not really. But then he pointed out, well, that Sharks game next week, that's going to be tough to get up for. There's no two ways about it. That was a trap game last night. And I think the Flyers through two periods, I mean, until Tippett scored, I really feel like it looked like a trap game. It looked like at any point the Sharks could take the lead in this game and it could have got away from them. Early in the third, the Sharks have a breakaway and Erson had to make his best save of the night to keep it a tie game. And then, of course, the Flyers score and all the momentum of the game shifts from that point forward. But it was a trap game. It just is. I mean, you look at the standings. The Sharks entered with a league worst 100 minus 111 goal differential. There's no way the players don't see that. And then you come out and it's kind of, I mean, you're getting outplayed for stretches of the game. You're taking penalties, which is always an equalizer when you're playing a much inferior team. If you start taking penalties and putting them on the power play, I mean, let's be honest, the Sharks' second power play unit looked better than either Flyers' power play unit.
Yeah.
To take the names off the jerseys and, you know, take what you know out of the standings, and you would look and say, okay, well, that team's got a decent power play because they look good and they scored on it. So, I mean, that was part of the trap the Flyers fell into, is a penalty-ridden two periods of a game. And, you know, penalties happen when you play kind of lackadaisically, like maybe we're just going to show up and win this game. And that's the way they played. So I think my biggest takeaway was get the 2 points and get out in a game that you got away with some stuff. And that's what they did. So, I mean, you can't take that away from them. They played a team that was, I mean, what are the Sharks playing for? It doesn't matter whether they win or lose. So they come out, they have nothing to lose. The Flyers, everybody comes out and everyone says, this is 2 points in the bank. They have to have these 2 points. Look at the standings. You can't lose this game. There's no way they don't think that. And you come out and the game looks a lot like a trap, and but they escaped. So that's my biggest takeaway for sure.
Celebrity cook Steve Martorano brings his Italian-American cooking back home to Philly. Enjoy Martorano's Prime at Rivers Casino and Steve's famous meatballs with Sunday gravy, prime steaks, and more. Make reservations for Martorano's Prime on Open Table.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Rocky Thompson said he felt the guys on the team had a wake-up call about midway through the game. And I don't even know if it was so much like they didn't respect San Jose, but they got away from exactly what they wanted to do. And I found it interesting. He said the Sharks have a good power play. And I was kind of like, I looked it up. They actually have like a middle-of-the-pack power play. And the whole game plan was like, guys, if we do not commit penalties and we just play them 5-on-5, we should be good.
Yeah, I think what did Bush say during the game, they're minus 71 at 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Like just in 5-on-5 play, they're minus 71 in goal differential. Yeah. So what does that tell you about their power play?
Right.
That tells you don't put them on the power play and you're probably going to win.
Right. And they committed, I think, 6 penalties before the third period.
Yeah. And I feel like games like that, penalties start to become contagious. It's like, I don't know why they could become contagious, but it seems like they do. Because the games where the discipline gets away from the Flyers, I feel like it gets away from them, not in 2 or 3 penalties. It's 6 and 7 penalties. Mm-hmm. And you feel like you're killing penalties the whole game.
Yeah.
And that is not a recipe to play against any team in the league, let alone good teams, which now the Flyers go and you have 2 games with Toronto. You have 2 games with Boston coming up. You have Carolina. These are not teams you want to mess around with and put on the power play.
Exactly. And to their credit, they woke up in the third period. I don't think they committed a penalty in the third. And Samuel Harrison just, in my eyes, makes the play of the game. He makes that huge save early in the third period on a breakaway. Really, really felt like the Sharks were going to grab a lead and then the Flyers were going to feel all the pressure. But he makes that save. They score 57 seconds later, and it just seemed like they were in control at that point. That was just massive, Joe. I thought Samuel Harrison was the most important player in that game.
Absolutely, and that against a team like the Sharks, you need that sort of swing in a game to just put them away, because they're in a game like that where they're playing loose. You need to take away their belief. And that swing, not scoring on the breakaway, Konechny sets up Tippett for the goal. I feel like that took all the belief that they could win out of that game. And, you know, it starts with Harrison. If Harrison lets that in, then the Tippett goal, we don't know if the Tippett goal happens, but hypothetically, the Tippett goal ties the game if Harrison lets that in. Yeah. So it's a totally different game if the Sharks take that lead, because then all of a sudden you're in the third period and you're losing to the worst team in the NHL at home. In a game that really, really matters in the playoff race. And that's a totally different mindset. It's a totally different building, because the save by Harrison gets the building going and then obviously really gets it going when Tippett scores. And the building's a nervous, you can hear a pin drop building if Harrison lets that goal in. And I agree with you. Yeah. Like he's been in a lot of these games, he's been the most important player. Because even past just that moment last night with him making that big save, he didn't have a lot of clunker games. And he would tell you the game against Tampa was just that. It was a clunker. Bounced back last night. And I don't care if he bounced back against the Sharks, the Blackhawks, or he bounced back against the Rangers or Vegas. It doesn't matter. The opponent doesn't matter. It's the way he played. Because he was tested. So that was huge too. And equally as important is that single moment in the game.
I couldn't agree more with the impressive bounce back too. That was the shortest outing of his NHL career in Tampa Bay. Rookie goaltender, you wonder if maybe that hurts him a little bit mentally. How does he go into this game? And he looked like real driven to show up and kind of spearhead that win. And he did. And Joe, with how thin they are on defense on the back end, I really thought some of their bigger named forwards, a lot of them younger guys, kind of need to get going here. They need to step up and kind of provide the offense. I think they're going to have to be defensive on the back end, and their forwards are going to have to drive things offensively. They get three goals from young forwards, Owen Tippett, Joel Farabee, Morgan Frost. But going back to defense, York and Sanheim play huge minutes, very effective. They're going to have to kind of shoulder the load here. Do you feel like they can continue to get away with being so thin on defense because of injuries and the trade? Can they get away with this against some of the better teams?
York, I would say yes, because I feel like this is the progression of his minutes. Mm-hmm. Sanheim's been playing a lot of minutes all year. So will he get worn down? He may, but they don't really have a choice.
Yeah.
Because it's not like you're going to throw other guys out there in crucial points of the game. There's not enough healthy bodies. They're missing Jamie Drysdale. Torts points out the other day, it's kind of gone overlooked, the loss of Rasmus Ristolainen. But this is a guy who's played big minutes in NHL games. He's a big body. He's a physical player. They're missing all that right now. So they're missing guys to rely on. And these two right now are the guys to rely on. Yegor Zamula, he was sick. He comes back, played well last night, stuck up for his teammates in the first period there. So maybe he gets a little more as he gets back into the flow. But I'm not, based on what we've heard John Tortorella say about Yegor Zamula, I'm not sure how much they trust him in terms of the nitty-gritty defensive parts of the game. They like him clearly on the power play. I'm not sure about the other stuff yet. I'm not sure he's ready to play 25 plus minutes in a game. I don't think he is, and I don't think John Tortorella would put him in that spot. So really, I don't think they have a choice other than to play these guys big minutes, and we'll see whether they can, you know, whether they can handle it. But York, I feel like York is getting better with the more minutes he plays. Mm-hmm. And Sanheim's game is consistent, whether, you know, whether there's breakdowns because of, you know, playing almost 30 minutes remains to be seen. But York, I think it looks like he's thriving on playing more minutes.
I know a lot of defensemen say they love more minutes, but some of them really do. And Cam York, I remember it day one development camp, right after he was drafted. He had this California kid vibe to him, but then he said, I want to be an all situation defenseman. I want to play close to 30 minutes a night. And you can see, like, more minutes, I think he gets better. And
what's interesting about him saying that is he didn't say 25 minutes. He said 30 minutes.
Yeah, it caught my ears.
What's the list of defensemen that play 30 minutes a game
right
in the NHL? I mean, Victor Hedman, Charlie McAvoy. I mean, they're the cream of the crop defensemen are the only ones that would be trusted to play 30 minutes. And he mentioned 30 before he had ever played.
Yeah.
So that is telling to me. And it's a good sign. And I feel like when he plays, you see the confidence and you see a different player. You see a player trying to get shots through lanes at the blue line. You mm-hmm. see different things from him when he knows he's being relied on. Yeah. And I think he's thriving with more minutes.
And they have two young defensemen being flanked by veterans right now that I just don't think they're going to put too much on their plates on those pairs. You have Ronnie Adder and... It's Ronnie Adder and Eric Johnson. Mm-hmm. It's Ronnie Adder and Mark Stahl. And then it's Igor Zamula and Eric Johnson. And I think they're just really going to have to ride.
But when Zamula wasn't in there the previous game, you had mixing and matching because of the five.
Yep.
So,
I think they need to watch how much they play those veterans, given their age, and they're not the fastest guys on the ice. And then, and then they have kids next to them.
You don't want to. Eric Johnson wasn't brought here to play 27 minutes.
Right.
And you're not going to play Ronnie Adder heavy minutes.
Right.
They're guys, as weird as it is to say, they're there to spell Sanheim and York.
Right.
And, you know, kind of get through those minutes.
Yeah.
And that's why they bring in an Eric Johnson. He can grind out minutes. He did it for a team that won a Stanley Cup. So, you know, I think that's the approach they have to have.
And I think,
maybe some nights you need Eric Johnson to play a little more.
Yeah.
And I think he expects that. But on most nights, that's not going to be the case.
No, exactly. I think you can rely on those guys. Like, the bench probably has a lot of trust in those two because of how long they've played and how many big games they've played in. But at the same time, you have to understand their ages, and the guys they're playing with are also young guys. To me, it's saying that York and Sanheim are probably facing the biggest challenges of their career. This is Sanheim's first real crack at being a number one and playing these types of minutes in these games. And York's in his first full season at the NHL level. So it'll be a huge storyline in my eyes, Joe, of how those two handle things and how quickly Nick Seeler can get back and kind of stabilize that a little bit. Seeler was a guy they relied on a lot in hard minutes. I think he'll bring some stability whenever he gets back. But right now, you know, I haven't seen him on the ice at Voorhees. He said his injuries week to week, so we'll see where that goes. But right now, huge stretch, 7 straight games, Joe, against teams in playoff position, all contenders. What do you think they have to do over this stretch to kind of stay afloat and really stay in the position they are in the race?
Well, all year, this team's been showing us that they – let's take out the Tampa game the other night, which I have one more point that I wanted to follow up with the defenseman that involves that Tampa game.
Sure.
But this team has not ever shown that they're not ready to play against some of the league's top teams. They've beaten Florida twice in Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, they've won a game. They've won against Tampa. They've won against Dallas. Yeah. They've won against big time teams. We had a conversation a couple weeks ago on this podcast about how a lot of those big wins came against Western Conference teams. Mm-hmm. Now you got to take that same approach and do it against these Eastern Conference teams. Yeah. The last time you played the Bruins, it wasn't pretty. It was on home ice. You owe them. Go to their home ice on Saturday and you know, roll the pucks out and see what happens.
Yeah.
And if Sam Harrison plays the way he played against San Jose and the way he's played basically every game except the one against Tampa, he's going to keep you in every game and give you a chance. And I think that is the key. He has to remain the most important and the most valuable player on this team for them to have a chance to beat the Bostons and the Torontos and the Carolinas, which are all coming up. What I did want to say about the defensemen going back to Tampa, I found it a little puzzling that maybe they didn't scale minutes back in that game for their top defensemen, because it became clear that that game was out of reach.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised they didn't kind of, it's not really the NHL way to just punt a game like that, but I was surprised they didn't scale some minutes back in the third period of that game. And, you know, maybe Sanheim doesn't play almost 29 minutes in that game, because what are you getting out of those heavy minutes when that game halfway through, I mean, we're looking at a game that the Flyers weren't in.
Yeah.
So I was a little surprised by that. And, you know, I do think they're going to have to take advantage of opportunities to scale back the minutes. Hopefully that is a game when you're up 5-0, but I don't know how many times you're going to be up 5-0 against this schedule that's coming up here. So if you're out of a game, scale back the minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, let these other guys play minutes, because after all, your approach has been, it's great if we make the playoffs, but we're also in this developing mode. And part of developing is giving guys more minutes to play. So if there's games where that the score either way is giving you an opportunity to do that, I think you have to take advantage. So I would use that approach going forward. I'm not saying a 2-goal game. I'm saying if it's a 4-goal game or a 5-goal game, you take the opportunity and scale back some minutes.
Yeah, it was hard to believe Sanheim even played that many minutes, because he had an injury scare in the second period with his knee.
Yeah.
And at practice the other day, he was wearing, at morning skate yesterday, he was wearing a knee brace on his left knee. So he seems fine. Clearly he's playing, but he had that scare, and you would think maybe they would taper back his minutes, and they didn't.
Yeah. In a game that really,
that was over.
I know a coach's and a player's mentality is like, we're never out of a game. That game was decided midway through.
Yeah.
It just was. It wasn't their night. And those games are going to happen. When the Flyers have been playing playoff type games since November. I mean, they have to play that way to win because they don't have Nikita Kucherov or you know, a Connor McDavid, somebody that's just going to put the team on their back and carry them. That's the way you have to play. So when you play that way, when you're all out every game, you're going to have nights like they had against Tampa. And if you have them again, I'm not saying that it's going to happen multiple times, but if it happens, if you're playing seven games against playoff teams coming forward and two of those are bad games, take the opportunity to scale the minutes back. I think, I think you have to play that way or else you're going to get to the, if you get to the playoffs, you're going to get there and you're going to find that you have a lot of tired defensemen. So that would be my approach going forward too. Not that you want to, you don't want to sit there and wave white flags, and that's not what I'm suggesting. But what I am suggesting is take the opportunity to scale back, much like you would if a starting pitcher is having a bad night. You're going to take them out, and you're not going to have them pitch in a 7-0 game if they're having a bad night. So I think you have to take the same approach here.
And to that point, I know John Tortorella gets this reputation of a guy that always pushes his teams and is really hard on them in practice. But I had a former player of his from his Tampa Bay Cup winning team say down the stretch, like he looks for days that to take off. And he did it today, Wednesday, as we recorded this podcast. They were originally scheduled to practice. He gave them a day off. I think he's going to continue to do that because of the importance of keeping guys fresh, like understanding at this point of the season, they are who they are. I don't think they really need to hammer any more details down in practice, get them rest. Same thing with a defenseman. Like Sanheim and York have not been in this spot yet. And not to sound like a coach, but I think it's going to be very intriguing and interesting just to see how they handle this. I think it's good that they're playing these types of minutes in a playoff race. It'll be worth watching to see how they respond to it, see how they grow from it, maybe fail or succeed. I think it'll all be good for those two. They're going to be important players without a doubt for the Flyers. Big games, Joe. It'll be a fun stretch. Seven straight against teams in playoff position, all contenders. We'll have it all covered here on the Flyers Talk podcast on Flyers pre and post game live, produced by our very own Joe Fordyce. Joe, thank you so much.
And produced, just to mention, hosting. We should right. We should mention that we don't have the game Thursday against Toronto on our air, but Saturday we have a really cool feature on our pregame show. Scott Hartnell was out on the ice the other day at Voorhees with Ryan Poehling and Cam Atkinson talking about their first playoff run. And it was just the three of them on the ice, shooting pucks at one of the Flyers Warriors goaltenders and talking about, you know, playing in these meaningful games, the atmosphere in this building when these games really matter. And so it's a really cool feature. Just the players chatting, and we'll have that on Saturday's pregame show.
Joe, that's Saturday. It's a 7 o'clock game, right? So pregame, 6:30. Perfect. Yep. Can't wait to watch that. Joe, thank you so much. Great to see you. Great to chat with you. A big thank you to Ben Berry, our podcast producer and guru. And Flyers fans, as always, thank you so much for listening to the latest Flyers Talk podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, please rate and listen. And we can't wait to talk to you next time.